Dr. Paul, welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors and Science Under Fire. Today's show, I interview Dr. John Reisenman. He is a psychiatrist who just completed a book called Conscious Medicine, an Integral Model of Healing. We talk about the difference between conscious and unconscious medicine. It's powerful, folks. We talk about the health continuum, the important distinction between quantity of health and quality of health, between health and disability. And we also talk about the need for a parallel system. He's come to the same realization that I've come to, that so many of my peers who you've heard on this show have come to the same conclusion, that our current medical system is so broken, we can't even fix it. We have to build a new system. So we're all on the same page for you on that. It's happening. I then finished the show with an interview with Ben Tapper. He is one of the Disinformation 12. And oh boy, let me tell you, we are unpacking the pandemic, censorship, and so much more. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. This Memorial Day, I had the privilege to be at Depot Bay, Oregon. This is claims to be the smallest port in the world, and indeed, I think it might be. This tiny little port with maybe 50 vessels at most, a couple of large Coast Guard ships, well, large boats anyway, that honored our veterans in the most amazing way. It was a sunny day. The ships gathered, and after they had their ceremony, they did a procession out under the bridge, out to the ocean, made a circle, and then a Coast Guard helicopter comes in, drops within the circle a large wreath, and then all the boats put their wreaths that they had carried out. These are wreaths honoring not just our veterans, but those who were lost at sea. You know, Newport, Depot Bay, and all the coast towns along the Oregon coast have fishing industry, and periodically we lose people to boating accidents and tragedies that are related to poor weather. But I want to focus here also mostly on our veterans. Those of you who have veterans in your lives, families who have chosen to serve our country, we've lost over 1 million in the years of all the various wars. These are sacrifices that were made for us. Every single one of us living in America enjoy a level of freedom not known by very many. What I'm concerned about is that medical boards, public health officials, elected governors, for example, with their various decrees, emergency orders, have caused a situation where we are now at high risk for losing the freedoms that have been fought for and sacrificed for hundreds of years. This is not the time for any of us to just rest on our laurels and think that everything's going to be fine. I do believe it will be fine, but it will be fine because we are going to stand and say no to all the forces that are trying to nullify the sacrifices made by those who went to war for us on behalf of the freedoms here in the United States. So it's just a message of hope, a message of freedom, but also a warning that we all stay vigilant. Something is going on. We've all felt it. We've noticed it these past 2-3 years. And this is not the time to just say, oh, things are getting good again. It's time to really make sure we stand for freedom in every possible way. Thanks. I'm Dr. Paul. Welcome, Dr. John Reisenman. You are a guy that I've been wanting to talk to ever since I stumbled on your book, Conscious Medicine.
Thank you.
Yeah, you graduated from Loma Linda University Medical School, specialized in psychiatry. You've had an emphasis in functional medicine and have been in private practice in the Loma Linda and Redlands, California area for 37 years, which puts us, I'm guessing, around the same era of medical school training. Out of curiosity, when did you finish medical school?
1981.
Okay. Yeah. You were a few years ahead of me then. I remember doing my psychiatry rotation thinking that, man, this is pretty easy. I mean, in 6 weeks, I figured out the few meds that we had back then. And, you know, there was stuff for depression, stuff for bipolar, well, one or two things. And that was pretty much it. I think they'd gotten away from lobotomies at that point. And of course, we've had the DSM-3, then 4, then 5, that diagnostic statistical manual that's sort of your guys' Bible in psychiatry. And I noticed something about that, and I'm going to have you talk about your journey
from mainstream traditional psychiatry training into functional medicine, because I think there's a parallel with my own. But I noticed that manual is all about labels. There's just a list of symptoms. You fit this diagnosis, boom, here's your diagnosis. And then you have, based on that, here's these list of pharmaceutical products to hopefully treat your symptoms.
Right. You know, what's interesting is that in psychiatry, it's more so than most other parts of medicine, that the diagnosis is just a description. It doesn't in any way indicate the etiology or the cause.
Right.
And physicians are kind of deluded into thinking they're treating the cause when they're treating the diagnosis, but all they're doing is masking symptoms.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when they do that, the imbalance is never corrected. And so it's driven deeper into the constitution, and it manifests itself in other dysfunctions in other organ systems, new diagnoses, and new round of pharmacotherapy.
Yep. I had for a while I was doing addiction medicine as well. And I had a young lady come in. She was in her early 20s on 7 different psychiatric meds at young 20s. And like, oh my word. Share with our audience a little bit about your journey. I imagine you started off medical school fairly traditional and somehow you ended up in functional medicine.
Yeah, in medical school, I just started seeing things that just didn't sound right to me. Because when I went into medical school, I thought I was going to become a healing practitioner. But it wasn't about healing at all. It was about managing disease. And when you manage disease, that's exactly what you're going to have. And so it's disguised as healthcare, but it's really sick care. And so I started to, you know, look outside that, and most of my colleagues pretty much canceled me when I asked the kinds of questions that sort of challenged the narrative. So I started to collaborate with chiropractors and naturopaths in the surrounding community, and we would refer to each other, and I started going to holistic health conventions and went to the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, and then finally the Institute for Functional Medicine, and discovered this is what healing's all about. It's identifying the imbalance and correcting causes instead of just masking symptoms. And so that's what kind of took me in that direction. And then I was fortunate enough to have a medical group that allowed me the freedom to integrate functional medicine in my practice. And so I didn't get any problems from the doctors that I worked with in that group, but I was getting canceled by doctors in the surrounding community when I started messing with their patients and providing some improvement. For example, I had one patient who came to me, who was referred to me by a GI doctor to treat for depression. And he had this GI disturbance for about 2 years. And I asked him, have you ever tried probiotics and digestive enzymes? And he never had. So I suggested he try that. He came back about a month later and all his symptoms were gone. And I got a nasty call from the GI doctor asking me why I was fiddling around with his GI symptoms. He sent him to me to treat for depression. I said, aren't you happy that he's better? No, he wasn't. Now, on the surface, you might think he was angry because I was taking away his livelihood. You know, now this patient's not going to see me anymore. But it's more fundamental than that. And I think it comes out clearly in your case where the medical board went after you, because they claimed that you were a danger when in fact you were improving patients better than the conventional system. So your treatment, my treatment, all the doctors that you interview who've been under fire, the results they get is an indictment of the sick care system.
Yeah,
no one wants to think that they're causing more harm than good. And so what they're doing is actually projecting the harm onto you, when actually they're the ones who are causing it, but it's unconscious.
That brings us to the title of your book, Conscious Medicine, An Integral Model of Healing. I think being conscious, I'd like to hear your take on this. What do you mean when you say conscious medicine versus unconscious medicine?
Conscious medicine is mindful healing. It's restoring balance by correcting causes instead of masking symptoms. Simple as that.
Yeah.
And unconscious medicine then is basically conventional Rockefeller, Flexner Report type of medicine that masks symptoms instead of providing cures.
Yeah. Maybe for our audience, because this hasn't come up maybe but once in over a year that I've been doing this show, explain what the Flexner Report was. I think, wasn't it around 1910, something like that?
Yeah, that's where it was supported by Carnegie and Rockefeller. And basically, Flexner went around to all the medical schools and basically decided which ones were legitimate and which ones were quackery. So they closed all the homeopathic and naturopathic schools and kept open only the allopathic schools that bought into the whole pharmaceutical paradigm.
Yeah, and poured a lot of money into those schools that would go along with their paradigm.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you have an interesting description in your book about legitimate science today being replaced by a religion masquerading as science, striking parallels with medieval dark ages. Wow, that's a powerful statement. Expand upon that a bit.
When you think about it, what happened during the middle, medieval ages, the clergy expropriated reason and disallowing man to think for himself. So they were the arbiters of truth. They were the ministry of truth, and they decided what people were to believe. Well, in our current day, the scientific clergy have expropriated the senses and forbidding man to see for himself. They're saying, quote, we cannot believe our own eyes. And so this whole thing about post hoc reasoning, that if a person improves from an intervention, you can't possibly know that it was a result of the intervention. Okay. But the thing is if that's the truth, then we don't know that any of the approved treatments are the result of the intervention either. It could still be placebo. Okay. So you have to be able to use your mind and follow patients systematically. You apply a treatment, they get well. You stop the treatment, they get worse. You put them back on the treatment, they do better again. I mean, that's the scientific method. But people think that if they apply a proven treatment, obligatory, that's being scientific. It's not. That's having faith in the studies. That's basically religion.
Yeah. No, your explanation took me right back to when I woke up to what was going on with autism. It was a thing that was so rare. I imagine when you were in medical school, do you remember seeing a single case of autism?
No.
No, I didn't either. I came by about 3-4 years after you and not a single case. Yeah. When they wanted to teach us about disability in children, they sent us to a community of Downs kids. Yeah. It just really wasn't around. So for me, it was in the early 2000s. It just exploded. And I ended up in my own practice having one case per year, 2004, 5, 6, and 7. And it was just like, okay, I can't keep doing business as usual. Have a normal one-year-old who's starting to talk, has great eye contact, just regress into nonverbal spinning and flapping and pain and GI symptoms and just say, oh, well, sorry, your kid has autism. Good luck. It's insane that pediatricians, I imagine psychiatry and pediatrics overlaps a little bit in this area, actually, we're left with, well, try this antipsychotic just nuts.
You know, it's funny because I've talked to one of our pediatric psychiatrists at Loma Linda, and I was mentioned to him the connection between vaccines and autism, and he completely dismissed that. And said that, you know, well, the autism usually begins about the same time period. It has nothing to do with the vaccines. So in my mind, this is the church of vaccinology. It's a religion.
Yeah.
Because they don't allow debate. They shut it all down. It's very dogmatic. And it's like a doctrine that you cannot challenge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's actually why I've been threatened with my license. the funny story behind that, you may have heard it. They've been after me since I wrote the book, The Vaccine Friendly Plan, in 2016. But 2018, actually it was February 2019, they sent me a board request to prove that that my Vaccine Friendly Plan approach was as safe as the CDC schedule. That promoted me to do a quality assurance project of every patient born in my practice, publish that data in a peer review journal, and 5 days after it was available online, they yanked my license as a threat to public health. We had incredible outcomes in the unvaxxed, which was actually, it was a little shocking to me that the Vaccine Friendly Plan, which is much safer, but even that was just horrible compared to unvaxxed. So
again, that's an indictment of the sick care system.
Yep. Absolutely.
It exposed the weakness of the whole paradigm.
Absolutely. Share with our viewers, so many people today with, for various reasons, are suffering from what is traditionally called psychiatric problems, be it depression, anxiety, et cetera, right? Share briefly what you have found in functional psychiatry to be very helpful for folks who are struggling.
Well, functional psychiatry, basically, you do lifestyle interventions and assessing their diet, their nutrition, their exposure to toxic chemicals and so forth. And so some of the things that I've done is to evaluate, for example, is this person a good methylator? So I'll do the homocysteine tests and the genetic test to see how well they methylate. And if they come back as being deficient, then I'll recommend that they take nutritional support. Other instances, I'll check a body burden with toxic heavy metals. And I did a study of 100 cases, and virtually every single person had significant high levels of mercury and lead. And so basically, recommend detoxification protocols to clean all that up. And as patients would do these kinds of things, all their medical problems, whether it would be diabetes or heart disease or whatever, starts to improve. Because basically, when you're intervening at the level of the system, all these other manifestations of dysfunction start to clear up.
Isn't that amazing how, it's simple, it's not easy, right? Lifestyle changes are the hardest thing of all. Giving up our soda or cigarettes if you're a smoker, or alcohol if you're a drinker, or trying to eat real wholesome food, etc. But it's simple, you just have to do it. And you're seeing, I imagine, amazing results.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's frustrating because a lot of the, for example, nutritional supplements, they're not covered by insurance.
Correct.
And a lot of patients in my practice just don't have a lot of discretionary income. So if it's not covered by insurance, a lot of them wouldn't do it. And basically, they never got better. It's the ones who went ahead and decided to invest in their health are the ones who actually got better.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You have to buy in and realize that our health, folks, never before has it been more important, is in our own hands. You cannot go to a traditional doctor, allopathic regular MD, and expect to regain regular health if you're not healthy.
And I think when you're doing that kind of work, you need to be an example of what you're preaching.
Yeah.
So you need to be in good health yourself and incorporate all these lifestyle measures that you're preaching your patients to.
That's so true. I only had success as I was having success in my own life to some extent. You have a term in your book, the insanity of humanity, and I can't remember what you were referring to.
Well, Carl Jung said that the man is the great danger, unconscious man, because basically man is in search of a soul, and he does all these things to destroy his home, the environment in which we live. And this that kind of thing is insanity. Why would any person destroy the home that they live in? And yet that's what we're doing. And then the way that we treat one another, the way we treat our own bodies, all of this stuff is basically insanity. It's, you think about all the wars that we've created, all the millions of people who've been killed, and this is considered normal. Hmm. So the insanity is essentially the psychopathology of the average. It's so ubiquitous that people don't even notice it. Because it's just considered normal.
How would you talk about the COVID thing we've been through the last couple of years with that in mind?
Well, that COVID really exposed everything I talked in my book, but on steroids. I couldn't believe it. But the other thing that it introduced, though, is how palpable the evil was. It's not just insanity. There's something evil. It's a spiritual war that we're in. And it comes back to this notion, then conscious healing is really a spiritual practice. It's all about bringing people back into harmony and balance with the environment, with their fellow man, and within themselves. And that's essentially what we need to focus on.
So, Dr. John, you've touched on something that's been huge in my life the last couple of years, and this whole mention of the soul and the spiritual aspect of who we are. I had lost touch with my own soul, being so busy being a doctor, and sure, I was doing some good work, but I was on a treadmill. And speak briefly about how one gets back in touch with their soul and with what's important.
Well, I guess every person sort of has to find their own way. You know, it's going to require a journey inward. And, you know, I had been under fire quite a bit during my practice. So I spent the 15 years doing research and reflecting and writing this book. And so, you know, you have to take time off away from, you know, the treadmill. You have to get off that and just start doing some inner work, you know, journeying inward, reflecting. If you don't do that, you're just going to burn out. And so many, you know, physicians I've run into have left the practice of medicine. They've started other careers because they just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah. I think for even non-medical people, anybody living in this world today with the stresses that the COVID, the response to COVID really was what created most of the stress, the quarantines, the masking, the fear mongering, that it was just relentless. Folks, we all have got to take that time, as Dr. John says, and go inward and be in touch with our real selves. I like something that you have in your book. I think I'd like you to expand on it a little bit. You talk about a health continuum. And I was wondering if you might sort of share a little bit about what that is and how you came to understanding that.
So the health continuum is really shows levels of health or life balance, function versus dysfunction. So I came across this kind of continuum early on when I was going to some of the holistic health conventions. And if you see, there's a red dashed line between the four and number five. So everything below that red dashed line is what conventional medicine is concerned with. And generally, you come into a physician, let's say with a full syndrome at level two, and you're diagnosed with a disease and you're put on pharmacotherapy, such as, let's say, diabetes mellitus, first diagnosis. Or you might have partial symptoms and you come in at the subsyndromal level. Let's say you're diagnosed with metabolic syndrome, which is sort of like a precursor. You still get on pharmaceuticals. And when you are taking drugs, it's doing is suppressing symptoms. So you might feel well, but that's an artifact of symptom suppression. And the degenerative process is not resolved. And what happens, it progresses until relapse or a new diagnosis appears. So the imbalance is not corrected, it is quiescent. And if you intervene above that red dashed line, you use basically health interventions such as lifestyle prescriptions to enhance physiologic reserve, rejuvenate the body, and finally achieve the vitalized level, which is optimum genetic potential. Now at this level, you have more resilience. You're able to fight off infections. You have better immunity against cancer and things like that. At this level, there's actually the body's more ordered. There's more more complexity, and you can actually do physiologic measures like heart rate variability, which indicate these higher levels. But at below that red line, you're basically managing disease. It's sick care, and you have a loss of complexity. I get into this. I revisit this chart in my chapter on complexity science and systems medicine. And what's interesting is that each one of these levels is also a level of a physiologic set point, which means it involves a state attractor around which fluctuations self-organize. So as you go up this health continuum, there's more order, there's more complexity, and it requires more energy. So it's really important to be able to make enough ATP to maintain that high level, which is far from equilibrium. It's a dynamic, steady state. You go down in the other direction, you're reaching thermodynamic equilibrium. So what conventional medicine does is they suppress symptoms, and by doing so, they may delay entry into the disability zone. They may actually postpone death, but the end result is it's slow-assisted suicide, because they're not doing anything about correcting the underlying imbalance.
Wow. This is so important, folks. Let's pivot over to your slide on quantity versus quality when it comes to your life vitality and health versus disability.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, most of the time we measure health outcomes in terms of the longevity. Okay, that's the quantity of life. But what's really important is your quality of life. And so lifespan, which is only quantity, it's one dimensional, but health span is two dimensional. It includes the quality of life. So whereas lifespan is the longevity of existence, health span is the longevity of vitality. And that's what's important. That's what keeps you above the disability zone. So in this example here, the red line descending downward is what you get with conventional healthcare or conventional sick care. But if you make a health intervention, which is a lifestyle prescription, somewhere around midlife, you can actually extend the health span, the amount of time the person spends above the disability zone. And that has enormous economic savings, both in terms of the person's health as also the fact that they can continue working.
Yeah, I'm thinking for people to really have this have impact, think about something like caring for your children or grandchildren or your loved ones, or just to hit guys where it really counts, being sexually able to function, right? You follow that red line and most men are impotent or have erectile dysfunction by age 50 to 60. You do a lifestyle integration, you might be fine till your 80s.
Exactly.
And it goes for just about any health condition. Wellness and vitality is served by the type of measures that you talk about in your book. So exciting. So you have some interesting perspective on evidence-based medicine. You know, we MDs are held to this standard. I mean, I'm being challenged by the medical board monthly pretty much on something that all boils down to what they consider to be the standard of care, let's say.
This gets a little complicated. I'll try to explain it. But basically, evidence-based medicine is essentially saying, okay, we're going to apply treatments that have been proven in clinical research, where you do a double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover study, and that gives you really robust data, and you can be certain that treatment, that remedy, is objective and it's proven. But the problem is the fallacy is to assume that provenness is a trait of the medication that then achieves a life of its own, can follow anywhere. No, it's relative to the context in which it was done. So it's a state dependent. The empirical signature of that remedy is dependent upon the context. But what we do is we take that and we transfer it to the clinical situation and apply it reductionistically, as if now you have to treat your patient with this remedy, even though many of the patients didn't respond in the research setting. You know, you have to do a little bit better than placebo, but what about all the patients who didn't respond? Are they supposed to still get that same treatment? It doesn't make any sense.
Or worse yet, who had terrible side effects.
Right, exactly. And so there's some people who've really looked at this in detail, and what they've discovered is that the clinical research setting represents a well-structured problem that just requires a simple solution, which is very definitive. Either the treatment is better than placebo or it's not. But in the clinical situation, that's an ill-structured situation. It requires a completely different inquiring system where the results are not as clear. And that you have to kind of weigh among a number of different perspectives. And so to try to apply reductionistically the research remedy to a clinical situation, you have to reduce the clinical situation to a caricature of itself. So every person is treated all alike with the same diagnosis. There's no individuality, no biochemical diversity, which is ridiculous. So this is the problem with standardized medicine, is that everyone with the same diagnosis is treated the same way. It's a one-size-fits-all. Same thing with the vaccine mandates. One size fits all for everybody.
Yeah. an example from the vaccine world that we saw with COVID, but they've been doing this for almost all vaccines and actually most pharmaceuticals, this concept of absolute risk reduction versus relative risk reduction, or you could get the benefit of a pharmaceutical, but it's just a relative benefit. They don't show you that it's making only 1% difference. Or in the case of the COVID vaccines, it was actually protecting about 1% or a little less than that. But they're going, oh no, the risk reduction is 95% when it was a relative risk reduction, which was just playing with numbers.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, another thing I wanted to mention, so I don't forget, is that another thing that really disturbed me about my medical indoctrination was that it wasn't just about the license wasn't just about what you can prescribe. It was also about proscription, what you weren't allowed to do.
Mm.
See, and if you did any of those things, then you get under fire. And I spent some time with a chiropractor in our community, and he was doing the Gerson therapy. So I learned all about the Gerson therapy from him. And interestingly, I visited a professor of anthropology at the University this is in Arizona. And he was diagnosed with bladder cancer, and they were going to remove his bladder. And I told him about the Gerson therapy, and his wife gave them the book on how to do it. His wife implemented that, cured him of his bladder cancer. Okay, but coming back to that, I talked to this chiropractor, and he was saying, you know, if you want to do all this stuff, just become a minister. You can do it all. There's no license for them to take away.
Yeah, no, it's a very strange world. How do we wake up our peers? Because I feel like the COVID exposed the fact to me that the sick care system, our current medical system, is so broken. And I think you mentioned this in your book. I don't know that we can fix it. We have to do something parallel. And how do we reach the people who are stuck in that system to say, hey, folks, there's a better way?
Well, you know, I finished this book in 2019 before COVID, and I talk about, you know, how we can kind of base medicine on more of a complexity science and get away from this reductionistic Newtonian paradigm that is completely outdated. And then in the epilogue, I talk about some practical ways that we might be able to do this. But since COVID, I agree with you. I think the system is broken and it cannot be fixed. It's been completely hijacked by corporations that care more about profits than about people. So I think we have to take Buckminster Fuller's advice and to create an alternative system that makes the current one obsolete. And a lot of people are actually in the works of doing that, not just with medicine, but with a finance system, agriculture, economics, all that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been an interest in PMAs. Private membership associations is one mechanism whereby if you know, you can have grocery stores that are private membership, because we could potentially get shut out of the ability to shop in the big stores.
Right.
If you don't have the right ID.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, giving you the floor to wrap it up, Dr. John, tell our audience what's on your heart.
Well, you know, I think that, as I said, we're in a spiritual war, and we have to ask ourselves what really matters. Is material wealth that important? You know, having a fancy car, a nice home, is all that really important? No, it's not. And I think that what we have to do is start reevaluating our values. So there's so much fighting over what people believe. We need to put all that aside and ask, what do we value? That's what's most important. What we value, not what we believe. And so we have to be able to have more tolerance and start to put our energies towards rebuilding a system that's based upon integrity and these values.
And how do we open the eyes, if that's even possible? Probably that's the wrong way to go about it. How can we attract people who, I mean, I have family members who, my own mom, and she loves me like nobody else. Well, Paul, how could you possibly be right and everybody else is wrong? Thinking about the other doctors who are, you know, pushing the COVID vaccine as a example.
Well, you know, I'm one of two doctors at my local community hospital that have not been vaccinated. Everyone else has been vaccinated.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, as Mark Twain said, it's easier to fool people than it is to convince them they've been fooled. So a lot of times when you present this information, people resist it because they don't want to believe they've been duped. Yeah. I'm hoping that, you know, that my book can be read by people and looking at the whole philosophical foundation of medicine and maybe start a dialogue and maybe start constructing a new narrative. So I'm hoping to, you know, I'm thinking right now to design a whole PowerPoint program that's based upon my book and start presenting it to educate the physicians.
You know, I think that's a wonderful idea. I'll have you back on when you get that PowerPoint ready. You are on to something that is so, so important, and your voice needs to be heard. Thank you for coming on the show Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a real pleasure and a privilege.
My pleasure's mine.
Welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. I have been wanting to have you on the show. You have the distinguished qualification of being one of the disinformation 12.
That's right.
So when I saw your name on that list, I'm going, man, what's this guy doing?
Yes.
It certainly appears to me and to those who are paying attention to what's going on in our world that the people being labeled as promoting misinformation or disinformation are probably the people we ought to listen to. So right. I've been wanting to get you on the show. Just briefly tell our audience a little bit about your background and maybe how you got to be on that list.
Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having me, first of all. And I'm just really excited to be sitting down with you because, you know, you are one of those docs that I really just have a ton of respect for because, you know, you are a true physician, a doctor with integrity, and, you know, you're not wavering your beliefs to you're not cowering and conforming to the tyranny that's in the world today. And you're making a stand for true health. And so I really respect doctors like you. I like to say that I'm one of those doctors as well, a doctor of integrity that's made a stand.
Yeah.
You know, I come from a family of chiropractors and my dad has been speaking out against, the vaccine corruption since the 70s. And basically he passed that baton on to me when he retired. But, you know, even before I got into practice, he would always educate me on vaccinations and this with corruption. And I was never vaccinated, nor my brother nor sister. And, you know, so, that was my childhood growing up and I really got a lot of attention, obviously early on, but we would put on vaccine workshops prior to 2020. Mm-hmm. And I listened to a lecture from a doctor in 2008, and he talked about the corruption and the manipulation of data at the National Vital Reporting System for the CDC. And he would talk about how they always just, they throw comorbidities in the death count with influenza. And 90% of the deaths were usually in the elderly. And I thought that was very interesting. And he had all the stats printed off. And so I've been following a close eye to those stats. I've been following those stats for over a decade. And when Corona hit, I said, all those numbers, they were being manipulated even more. And they influenza just up and disappeared. So I started speaking out early on. And in the fall of 2020, in August, I spoke out at the council. And within 24 hours, that video had 3 million views. It went viral.
Wow.
And it's just because people are starving for the truth and that's basically what put me on the map and it put me on that list, the disinformation, but anyway, that's kind of my story. And so,
yeah. So you have four children. What are their ages?
I have Ophelia. She's 11 and Owen is going to be 10 and then Olsen is 6 and Oswin is 4. They're my Cheerios.
Wow. Yes. And I'm guessing they're not vaccinated.
No, they're not. No,
I'm guessing they're very healthy.
They are very healthy. Thank the Lord. Yes.
Yeah. Amazing, right? Now you grew up in that world. I think the chiropractors have been fairly steadfast in as a discipline, you know, as a group understanding the risks of vaccines. more so than any other group of doctors. So you have probably had a career at both watching your own father's career and practice and then your own of being able to care for large numbers of people who are unvaccinated. Tell me a little bit about what that was like. What did you see in this unvaccinated population that was supposedly at such great risk of infections because they weren't vaccinated?
Right. Well, you know, we'd always talk about, you know, the importance of healthy lifestyles and making healthy choices. And your level of health is the genetic expression or the innate expression of how we eat, how we move, how we think. So teaching the moms to live healthy lifestyles, and that will, you know, that will portray onto the children, and the children will express healthy lifestyles as well if they follow that, the choices the parents make. But, you know, just seeing the children in the clinic living a natural style of health, they're better off. They're healthier. They don't have the ear infections. They don't have all this chronic illness that normal kids have. And you know, I, just like you, I know you really more than I have really put your data out there in the clinical data to show there is a significant difference in these children, the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated groups. And, you know, we saw that in our clinic as well. You know, we had parents, and especially once you start getting your name out there and start speaking out, the parents that have vaccinated your children come to you for help because they're not getting that help in the medical world. They're not getting, they're getting gaslighted and they're getting written off, or it was a genetic type issue. There's nothing you can do. And that's just not true. That's bad. That's really just bad science, and it's terrible bedside manners, and it's not true health. And so it was a privilege to be able to see those kids and help moms find the truth. And I tell you, there's nothing more satisfying is when you have a mom or a soon to be mom listen to you, take your advice, and then they are so grateful that they listen to you, and they show you that appreciation, and they become like family. And that's what's really a joy.
Yeah, absolutely. How many kids would you say you've taken care of in your career?
Well, I would say a third of my practice was a pediatric practice. And so, okay. And so we had, I mean, goodness, you know, we averaged about 300 visits a week. And so a third of that, about 100 of those were kids. And so,
yeah.
And so that, and I practiced that way for 10 years. And so,
and most of those kids were unvaccinated.
I would say, you know, probably close to 70% were unvaccinated.
Okay. In that group, just to kind of poll your experience, because I don't get to talk to too many doctors who have a large population of unvaccinated kids. Hmm. How many kids in your unvaccinated population had autism or other chronic conditions?
I never had a single one have autism that was unvaccinated.
Yep.
And so that's just the numbers. That's this there, you know?
Yep.
And it's, you know, and I've had moms come in that vaccinated their first two kids, and then they didn't vaccinate the other two. They like could have a total of four. They vaccinated two, then vaccinated the next two. And they would tell you that the unvaccinated kids are healthier. They see it firsthand.
Yeah.
You know, they hit their milestones sooner. They are speaking sooner. They're just healthier.
Yeah.
You know, and even on the vaccine inserts, if you look at, you know, on page six, where most adverse reactions are labeled on the inserts, they'll tell you, like, you know, all the conditions and side effects of these vaccines, and otitis media is on there, and they're inflammatory in the ears and everything else. That's why we had this explosion of ear infections, and nobody wants to talk about the elephant in the room, that how inflammatory these vaccines are.
Right.
You know, so.
No, I think that's why the vaxxed, unvaxxed data is so critical, because the CDC, the NIH, the health plans even, nobody was looking at total health outcomes comparing vaccinated to unvaccinated. Right. And so when I go around speaking and I present that data, it's just mind-blowing. And you've lived it. And so it's your total experience that, yes, these unvaccinated kids are so much healthier, but nobody wants to listen to us.
Right. You know, and my biggest thing is, you know, like I talk about, like in chiropractic school, we just got hammered with the nervous system, like just drilled on the nervous system and, you know, the development of the nervous system. And so I took that and went with clinical immunology and just, you know, and I applied, you know, the physiology to it. And in my study, like I found that these vaccinations, they're really bypassing the way the body's immune system really operates. And it's really so invasive. If you look at from a a microscopic view on them, just the needle penetrating the skin. It creates an instant, like, you know, almost an inflammatory response. And it triggers a wrong immunoglobulin. You know, we have this immunoglobulin E response right away. And but the CDC and everybody else is like, oh, it takes 2 weeks for your body to develop the right antibodies and immunity to this vaccine. But what's really occurring is that we have this inflammatory process and immunoglobulin E is triggered, releasing histamine, which when histamine is released, it allows the blood-brain barrier to be permeable, allowing all this junk adjuvants and everything else to penetrate in the nervous system and cause inflammation and cause other major problems. And it nobody's talking about that. And it's really concerning because I believe, truly believe, once we understand this and get this information to the masses, we're going to look back and be like, oh my gosh, we used to vaccinate through the skin and it used to cause all these problems. And then the media and the CDC, they're just covering up. It's just like a frontal lobotomies we did to the 50s. Like we look back like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we used to do that. Well, once we really look at how invasive these vaccinations truly are, I truly believe that we're going to look back and realize one day how invasive they are.
Yeah. It's unfortunate to me that this world we live in today, where the paradigm is vaccines are safe and effective, we need pharma to survive. Where would we be without vaccines, without pharma, when in fact, you know, stories like yours, your own personal experience, your family, your practice, where you focus on health and nutrition and supporting the immune system naturally, and you don't disrupt the natural order of the immune system with vaccines, you have incredible outcomes. But we need a new paradigm. How are we going to get there?
Right. Well, I think we need to just respect each paradigms that we all operate in. There's a massive purpose for the allopathic paradigm. There's a massive, and it saves lives. It really does. But, you know, vaccines, in my opinion, really don't necessarily fit into the wellness and prevention paradigm. And so we need to, you know, the wellness and prevention paradigm is very much present. I mean, Benjamin Franklin said an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. But we need to recognize that they're really, pharmaceuticals have no place in a wellness and prevention paradigm. Pharmaceuticals are much, very much needed, but they don't really fit into that paradigm. And, and so that's where I'm at. And the wellness and prevention paradigm is basically teaching people how to eat well, move well, think well, relate well, and we can be well. And again, and if we need an allopathic intervention, that's thank the Lord for that, because you know, the allopathic world, they are the doctors of that emergency care, to the trauma care, and they are the experts, the doctors are the experts. And very much we all have a certain place. And so that's my really understanding of how we get there, just really educating and not, you know, how do you say it, censor the docs that are speaking out into the wellness and prevention paradigm.
And yeah, we need both for sure. I think the emphasis could shift towards wellness and we would be way better off. But yeah, if you need an appendectomy or emergency C-section or you know, some trauma you've been in, we're in the best system in the world for that sort of care.
Right.
What's your take on COVID and what are you telling your patients or your loved ones?
Oh man, that's a loaded question. Well, so, you know, there's so much to this because, you know, I saw this early on. You know, we had a talk in November of 2019. You know, we had early on in 2019, I believe that it foreshadowed the pandemic. You have the ACIP, which is a subdivision of the CDC, talk about how, you know, they can't force vaccinate, but they force compliance. Well, that raises the question, well, how are they going to do that, right? You know, and then you have the World Health Organization early on say that the greatest threat to the world health are those who question or refuse vaccinations. Then you obviously have Event 201, which is super weird. And then you have all the stuff going down. Okay. So in fall, and not let alone the legislation, if you looked at all the legislation, all the bills that were being implemented that were very draconian in nature, like the SB 277 in California that passed, and all these other bills that were sweeping the nation, like in Maine and I believe it was Mississippi. But if you have, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that there's something coming our way. And so I spoke out in November of 2019. I said, and I held a seminar and I said, something big is coming our way. We need to be proactive in this fight. We need to stay alert. Well, then the crony baloney hit in 2020. And basically that's when I had another seminar in February. And I said, this is it. This is the Trojan horse to implement all this legislation. This is what they're going to do. And so I came off as a nutty loon to all of my family and a lot of my patients. I mean, I think I lost a third of my patients because I was very vocal in this fight. And then I was talking about the PCR test, how it's not meant to be diagnostic. And there's a lot of questions there with the PCR test. And, you know, and, you know, then I'd have people come up to me and say, listen, I had a lady reach out to me and said, my husband was in a motorcycle, died of a motorcycle accident. And they labeled it as COVID. So there was just all these stories that were really weird that were coming our way. But, you know, again, there was a lot of people like listening to me, but they weren't saying anything. They weren't speaking out. They were just listening. And, you know, my family, unfortunately, a lot of my in-laws, they don't even talk to me now. They work in the hospital and they think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but what I would tell my patients is that there's nothing to fear. One of my great mentors said that fear is the fire that fuels the furnace of disease. And if we are in a fearful state, we are in a sympathetic state, which is going to leave us vulnerable for disease. And so, and that's why I think it's criminal that if we're in a pandemic, why is there a constant death count on the media? Just nonstop 24-hour death count. All you're doing is you're almost breeding this fear-mongering state with the people, causing them to panic. I mean, I've had patients that have a common cold and they would freak out like, I need to go to the hospital. I'm like, just stay home. You're okay. If the media wasn't portraying this beating the COVID drum, you would just be just fine and you'd recover in a couple of days.
Yeah.
Nothing to fear here. You know, and we know now that there's a lot of this stuff coming out remdesivir, how it's faulty, and that the protocols are what's killing people. It's not COVID.
And what was your experience in your practice with COVID?
I mean, again, early on in the COVID, I lost a third of my people, but you know, I didn't really.
Meaning they left the practice?
They left the practice because I wasn't following, I wasn't complying first of all to the mandate. And I don't mean any disrespect to anybody that was following the guidelines. I mean, you know, I just chose to be stubborn and I didn't wear a mask and I had to put my hands on people. That's what I do for a living. I put my hands on every patient. So I had to violate one of their guidelines. So I said, it's childish. I'm not going to do this. And
so I imagine you and your staff got COVID and a lot of your patients did.
Right. No. Well, honestly, man, none of us, I didn't get sick once during the whole pandemic. And, you know, that's what I spoke out to against the city council. I said, listen, I've been seeing patients, 200 to 300 patients a week here. And I come in close proximity and I don't wear a mask and I've yet to get sick. I mean, and I asked the question, how many people do I have to see before the contagion claim is mathematically impossible? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
with that being said, and I would tell patients like, there's nothing to fear. And I would, you know, blaming the disease on a droplet is really like blaming the flies for the trash. And, you know, and if this germ theory were really true, we'd all be dead. That's not to say that germs can't cause a problem or cause issues in the body, but blaming this, I mean, I tell patients if they're sick all the time, come get adjusted or do this and that. I'm not afraid of this. And I never got sick. And I honestly, truth be told, I actually would have a ton of patients come in and they said, well, I just tested positive for COVID today or yesterday. And I said, well, you're doing the best thing you can right now. Just come see me. And I never got sick. Yeah. And it's just one of those things where that might actually challenge some people's belief systems, but it's really just, you know, live a healthy lifestyle. And that's what I do. Try to move away from that toxicity and deficiency into purity and sufficiency. And we can be well.
Yeah.
Nothing to fear. Now, if you're elderly and vulnerable, if you have other comorbidities going on, you're more likely to get sick. And that's a fact. But going back to the Spanish flu 100 years ago, there's so many parallels that we're running to this day. There, you know, and I have an article hanging in my office that I bought, you know, 10 years ago about Spanish flu. And I talked about how much manipulation of data was occurring back then and how the media was pushing this fear mongering. And the article even stated that they're, you know, about masks because they're pushing masks. And I have pictures of people that says, wear a mask or go to jail. It was like this virtue signaling going on. And, you know, the article, the author stated, does a hawk fence keep out mosquitoes, referring to the virus? And it was comical. But that means that I digress, but it's just, there's so many parallels going and where history is literally repeating itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what burning thoughts would you like to share with my audience?
Well, the biggest thing is obviously, you know, do your homework when it comes to these vaccines and, you know, coercion is not consent. And that's a big thing that I see across the board. That's one thing that just fuels my fire, and it makes my blood pressure rise, is when I have patients come out of the pediatrician's office and they said that the pediatrician has said, you know, your child's going to die if you don't get this hepatitis B vaccine, or your child's going to die if you don't get this shot. And that's really terrible.
Yeah. If you talk about a newborn born to a mom who does not have hepatitis B, yes, that newborn is not going to die if they don't get that shot.
Right. Exactly right. You know, and that's where, you know, excuse me, you know, that's why I love doctors like you. You tell the truth and you care about the patient, and you're not going to use fear mongering. If you feel a check in your spirit that you're being coerced to do something that's going against your beliefs or anything like that, you should leave that office immediately. There's nothing to fear when it comes to this. We need to understand that God made your baby and your immune system to be well. If you give the body what it needs, you can be well. And, you know, overcoming diseases like corona is far greater than anyone, including Dr. Fauci, has permitted us to believe, you know. And so treat the body well and your body will treat you well.
Super. And one last question for you. I'm going to give you a tough one here. So what do you recommend, or have you seen helpful for people who are vaccine injured, especially the COVID-19 shots?
Well, you know, when the COVID, going to the COVID vaccine, I'm telling people to fast, you know, especially if they have a really, really acute injury. I mean, fasting is, I would recommend, but also if it's a serious situation, like, you know, there's some people that have major injuries from this, and fasting is not going to do them any good. But I think, you know, I tell people to fast. I've been telling people to detox the best they can. But this shot is different. It's not your typical vaccine. And so I feel like we are very early on in this vaccine have seen what this is going to do to people. I mean, there's already, I've seen data and literature with that talk about the myocarditis that's occurring. So obviously any inflammation, you know, avoid inflammatory foods, get your omega-3s up to help combat the omega-6-9 ratio to help the inflammatory process in the body. Take some, you know, natural anti-inflammatories in the body. But avoid the sugar, the alcohol, the inflammatory foods, obviously. And that's kind of my angle of things, you know, but going outside of that is, you know, you're going to see different things with this vaccine. The technology in this is something we've never seen before. And they want to basically incorporate all vaccines eventually to be mRNA vaccine technology, which is terrifying to me.
Absolutely.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yep.
Let you have the closing words. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Paul, I just appreciate you. I appreciate us. I mean, the time is now for us to stand and not be complacent. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. stated that the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in times of comfort and convenience, but where he stands in times of challenge and controversy. Now is not the time to be complacent. Now is not the time to conform to the narrative here. Now is the time to be bold and courageous, to stand our ground, to be the salt and light of the earth. And, you know, we must not fear persecution. We are going to be persecuted, but we must welcome it. Every time anybody in history that took a stand for truth was faced persecution. Okay. But our convictions must be greater than our complacency to speak the truth, because the soil for truth right now is rich. The people are starving for it. God demands it, and our family deserves it. So,
Amen, brother.
Amen.
That is a very powerful closing statement. Thank you so much for coming on our show.
Yes.
And I can't wait to see you in the real, real flesh one of these days.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Paul. Take care.
Yeah, God bless.
Yeah. You too, buddy. God bless.
Dr. Paul, thanks for watching the show. Please visit doctorsandscience.com. There you can access our members only section. This show is member supported. We don't have to take sponsors. We don't have to have anybody controlling the content of our show. This is a huge perk most people aren't aware of. Your membership gives you access to my ebooks, transcripts of every show, PowerPoints from talks I'm giving around the country, and live bonus peeks at behind-the-scenes work we're doing, my off-the-cuff thoughts and reviews on current events. Your support makes all this possible. Thank you.
Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind.
go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.